In the beginning, there were those who followed warmth by migrating south as the glaciers pushed into northern Europe, and those who followed fire, an actual guy named Fir, who climbed a volcano and domesticated fire for human use. This is according to the story Fire and Ice by Danish writer Johannes V. Jensen. His opinion is that following Fir means you're tough as nails and deserve to reproduce. The snowbirds in his story who migrate south are depicted as unevolved, tree-dwelling, jungle-loving savages. If you're the last one up watching the coals from the campfire go from orange to black, then you're probably a follower of Fir. If you find the crackling of the fire more soothing than rain, then you're a follower of Fir. If you live in the West, you are definitely a follower of Fir. Fire is a part of life out west. We have a whole season for it. When fire comes out of the sky and comes up from the earth, it can burn through rain, it can jump over rivers. It's awesome. It's terrifying. I didn't know this made us special until I lived somewhere that didn't burn up every year. I didn't realize that we had our own language. Hotshots, smoke jumper, fireline, containment, pyrocumulus. Earlier this month, I drove to Boise, arriving late at night on the hottest day of the year. Actually, it was 1 degree shy of being the hottest day in Boise history. At 10 p.m., it was still over 100 degrees. The power went out where I was staying, and when our eyes adjusted to the dark, we discovered it wasn't dark at all outside. It was red, like a sunset, but it was midnight. The fire was so close, it called to us. We wanted to get closer, and so we got in the car and we drove towards it. We weren't the only car parked at the top of the hill just across the river from the perimeter. People had come from miles around to sit on the hoods of their cars and watch, to get showered with ash, to let the hot wind dry our sweat before it even escaped from our pores. This was 3 days after 19 firefighters died in Arizona. There was nothing else to think except, let it burn. Let that beautiful thing burn. That fire went on to burn over 46,000 acres of mostly BLM land. It was the equivalent of most of the neighboring towns put together, but there weren't any towns there. There was just wilderness, and wilderness is used to burning. Still, 250 people worked around the clock to put that fire out. They scooped up water from the reservoir and dumped it bucket by bucket over the flames. They dumped pink clouds of retardant from airplanes. They dug ditches with bulldozers like lines in the sand, daring the fire to cross it. When I was living in Alabama in grad school, my mom called one night to tell me that the house I grew up in Southern California had burned up in a wildfire. The house that had a buffer of concrete and an outer ring of succulent ice plant and nothing but dirt beyond that. My room with a sprinkler in the ceiling that I used to pretend was a camera, that I ritualistically waved goodnight to before turning out the lights. I imagined a room full of strangers who used to watch me sleep, some kind of big brother guardian angels, I know. It's weird. It was just a rumor about my childhood house burning down. The neighbors had called my parents as they were evacuating, and my mom assumed the worst. So someone still sleeps in that room at night, safe, watched. John McLean, who writes about Western wildfire, says that no structure is worth a human life. He told the rangers in the fire district around his cabin in Montana, the one his grandfather built by hand, not to defend it against fire. I'm prepared to let the cabin go, he writes in a commentary. Consider it the most effective insurance I can buy for the fire crews. I think it's important to know where you stand on the relationship between fire and home and life. To live in the West, you need to know what you're willing to sacrifice. You need to know how far you're willing to follow fear. When will children learn to let the wildernesses burn? This is Jennifer Pemberton for Utah Public Radio.